Here's your host,
Kirsten Sandifer.
Hi guys, welcome to Psychic Babes. I'm your host, Kirsten Sandifer. Today we have an amazing guest, Derek White Sky Cloud. Derek is a spiritual counselor, a medium, a shamanic healer, a paranormal investigator, a poet, an entrepreneur. He's the host of Between Two Worlds Radio on the United Paranormal Network, and he's a lifelong ET contactee. He's also known for his work with the Anunnaki. And Derek, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
So first, let's tell the listeners a little bit about your history with the paranormal and kind of how you got into this and how you got interested in it.
Well, basically, when I was a kid, I was actually originally from Manitoba in the eastern coast of Canada. And, you know, the settlements there were back in the 1650s, so there's a lot of history there. And the house I lived in was quite haunted. But it's kind of interesting when I, being an eight-year-old kid, my babysitters are ghosts. So they were the ones that kept an eye on me when my mom and dad are gone to work. You know, and a lot of times they could not afford a babysitter unless they got a relative to give me a hand, to give them a hand. And my cousin used to come over and visit me sometimes, but sometimes she'd be really late, but she wouldn't say anything. And yet I was always taken care of and watched over. So being an eight-year-old, you know, you could be mischievous, but I've had ghosts come up to me or a ghost come up to me and say, shh, be careful, be quiet, or behave yourself, you know. Let your mom and dad know that, you know. So it was kind of interesting how, and I thought they were real people. And people will come up to me in the room and they'll say, who are you talking to? You know, most kids always have that invisible friend. And that's exactly what I had, was invisible friends.
Yeah, I have that as well. So does my daughter. And one of her teachers at school tried to tell her that, no, you know, imagine it, that people don't exist. And I went up there and threw a fit and said, do not tell her that. You know, because you have no proof that that's not the case. And I don't want her to think that she's seeing something crazy or, you know, or is crazy for that. So,
yeah. Well, that's basically probably through their Christian belief system.
Yeah.
A lot of times they'll say, you know, ghosts don't exist. Well, you know what? In Christianity and some other beliefs of religion, there were. I mean, to look at, I tell people to get really detailed to it. You can think about Jesus. You know, he had his resurrection, and yet people have forgotten the resurrection. All they keep on thinking is, no, there's no such thing as ghosts.
But, no, I know, that's the funny thing. There's so much research out there to be looked at if people will just look at it. Like, people aren't informed, I feel, these days. They just make these, you know, blanket statements without really understanding what goes behind it. And I'm like, okay, I'll take you to some haunted houses and show you, like, real paranormal activity. You won't question it anymore.
No, what I get a kick out of is I watch people. And then, yeah, you say take him to a haunted house. I do the same thing. You know, I'll take a place that's haunted and see. You can tell me if there's no such thing as ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the times, the skeptics are the ones that get hit first.
They do, and the hardest.
Oh. And then they'll say, oh, that's just my imagination. Like, really? You want to use that word imagination?
Uh-huh.
Guess what? The good thing to use, it's my imagination. Yes, because the image is coming forward and showing you. Or we would use some of our machines to record the ghosts, EVPs,
mm-hmm.
and they would ask the question, and the ghost would answer, and it freaks them up. They're on, and
shows a level of intelligence. So, you know, it's not just a leftover residual energy. That's interesting.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good thing.
Well, my first experience as well, like, I questioned my sanity for a while. It was like, wait a minute, is this real? What's going on? Do I have low blood sugar? Like, what's going on here? And then I just started to realize, no, this is just part of your life. So,
yeah. Like, you know, people used to say, are you sure you are seeing ghosts? I said, I grew up with it, buddy. I'm used to it. Or also, like, a lot of times, too, I'm talking to a ghost, and they're very transparent at times, but in a way, they look real. So I'm standing there looking at them and talking to them, and the people walk up to me like, who are you talking to? And they now to this day, I mean, I can tell, I can understand today, because people actually have their cell phones in their ears, their earplugs in.
Mm-hmm.
So they think you're talking to the phone, but if there's no earplug in your ear, they think you're, you know, like, what's wrong with you? Well, I'm just talking to this person here. Who are you talking to? Oh, now I have to reach out, and my hand goes through them, you know. I went, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, just... just thinking things over, and I was just replaying myself. So you make them think that you're doing that, right? But school was different when I was a kid, and in junior in school, because kids would say, he's a crazy kid, stay away from him.
Oh, yeah. I got teased as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's okay. You know, it didn't bother me much. But I was never, I never had friends in school. I was always the kid.
The loner. Yeah, I was the same. I was the same way. I think that just comes with it whenever you know, and I always asked all these esoteric questions of people. I'd be like, how do you think we got here? You know, I'm like 5 years old, and they'd be looking at me like, what? We're just interested in playing on the playground. Like, what are you talking about, crazy kid?
You got to think, you got to remember now, too, back in the 1960s and 70s, there was no internet.
Yeah.
And there's no social media. You know, kids were always outside. And I was a kid that was always outside, too.
Same here.
And it's, you ever seen the movie called The Field of Dreams?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was that ball player. And we were playing baseball with a couple of ghosts that played baseball.
That's cool.
We watched the batter come up to it wasn't just me. Like, there was about four of us kids. Watch this guy. He wore an old baseball uniform, and he was sitting on the bench, and he comes over to our batter's box, and he was actually ready to play. Like, he actually had he was at the base, and he was going to swing one. He kept on doing this, like waving at us, and like, come on, throw the ball. And so I would throw it, and it made, and you can hear it crack. And yet, the ball is in the back catcher's glove, but you heard a crack. And then he'd look into the sky, and he'd put his hand above his forehead, and he'd run to first base. So he's reenacting his play.
Yep.
And because we were about no more than three blocks away from the baseball diamond, like the original baseball diamond where he once played. That was his life. His ghost was baseball.
Yep. So he wanted to keep playing.
Yeah. But he would play with his kids because he's reminiscing what he did when he was a kid. It was really neat.
What's your take on, you know, earthbound spirits, and have you encountered malevolent activity as well, and how do you deal with that?
Well, for example, in Manitoba is one of the most haunted provinces in Canada, next to Ontario. There's so many locations that have a lot of ghosts and appearances of ghosts, but we also had shadows, a lot of shadows of people, shadow people.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, people think, oh, shadow people, oh my God, stay away from those. No, they're just forms of people that take shape that they once lived on this earth, you know, a lifetime of their own. And there was a lot of hardship, you know, back in the early years.
Of course, in the wars and everything.
And a lot of hardship, as in even, you know, people trying to survive. And during the late 17, early 1800s, or even late 1800s, there was a lot of the law was got away with the law because they themselves had. Well, let's put it this way: in Manitoba, it was the biggest prostitution ring in Canada.
Wow!
They had over 800 prostitution businesses in Manitoba, in Winnipeg. And that's how the judges and the police and the lawyers made money.
Yeah.
Because they were actually the original pimps. And they would have underground prostitution rooms. And even when you go down there for a visit to Winnipeg, and they'll do a tour. There's actually a tour guides will show
you. The brothels,
brothels. And we have one brothel left that actually is active.
Yeah.
Like as physical. On one street, when you go down through to the tour, on the right side of the street, and you'll see a bunch of girls wearing scanty clothes on the balcony, calling the guys in to come in, and it actually is legal. So we do have one brothel in Winnipeg that actually you can actually have a legal, admission.
Yeah.
And so, but the girls try and call you in there. Come on, you look cute. Come on, man. You look cute. And there are some guys that came in, but most of the guys that do go in there are the older men, not as much as the young guys.
Right.
But the older folks, the older guys that are coming there, and most of them actually the farmers were the ones that used to come into town to the brothels to go see the girls because the wives would have nothing to do with them.
Right.
And this is back in the early years. And so what the wives of all the farmers did is they created a group and to stop the brothels from existing. So they broke that down to the point there was very few left. Yeah. And because they were using the churches involved and got involved. But it's a quite interesting – Winnipeg was considered one of the most quite a very interesting lifestyle, because even in that city, if you look at the Parliament building itself, it was built by the Freemasons. And the Freemasons are the ones that control the Parliament building.
Yeah.
Everything, if you walk inside the building, it's all Freemasonry design. And even our prime minister, like there's one room that's in the Parliament building. Even the prime minister of our country is not allowed to come in that room.
Isn't the Peace Garden in Canada? And it's, have you seen that, the shape of it? It's all Freemason stuff. Like,
yeah, there's, if you ever type in the word Manitoba Parliament Freemason, mm-hmm. They'll show you the video tour on YouTube, and you'll see what it looks like inside. And everything has everything's all related to the Freemasonry. But they have photographs when the Parliament building was being built, mm-hmm. and the Freemasons did the grand opening, and they wore their outfits outdoors in front of the public.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and it's only in this country once that's ever been done. And no one ever questioned the Freemasons.
Because they thought they were helping. They didn't know they had these mystery schools, and they didn't know that they were the ones behind all of the.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, when they had their presentation, the Freemasons actually wore their aprons. So the kids thought these guys were cooks. we were cooking up a meal, no problem. You know, because the guys the men were wearing their aprons. That's part of the Freemasonry. That's their outfit. So it's actually quite funny.
Well, I think at a certain level, like not everybody is privy to the knowledge of, right, of what their real agenda is.
No.
Like the lower level people, you have to get to a certain degree of, you know, being, you know, involved in order to really get to see the darkness and the.
Well, a good friend of mine, Johnny Enoch, he knows a lot about the Freemason stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's a guy I know in Manitoba who actually is the original researcher of the Parliament building that talks about the Freemasonry. And he's so knowledgeable. He's got everything, you know, like he pretty well, I forgot his name, but his research is right down. It's absolutely interesting. When he did a platform, about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, 7 years? Hang on a second. Six years ago, mm-hmm. I was in Winnipeg, and I was asked to come down to do a paranormal conference. And one of the speakers was the guy that actually was doing the talking about Freemason in the Parliament building, which is quite interesting because it had nothing to do with the paranormal. But they wanted him there for a reason, and which is, like, I think it's a really good thing he did, because for me, that brought the interest for me to know, pass it on to a friend of mine. But the Parliament building is actually haunted as well.
Oh, wow.
And my first experience of the Parliament building when I was only 10 years old, I remember seeing the Queen's crown, I seen her scepter.
Uh-huh.
It was absolutely phenomenal.
And probably haunted with malevolent spirits, right?
Yeah. And when I walked in the room with all these little kids, and I could see ghosts that looked like they're from the royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Standing around the red velvet rope where the Queen's crown and her scepter was. Oh, it was really cool.
Wow. Yeah. What do you think causes certain earthbound spirits like to stick around? Do you think it's just years of trauma, or do you think it's something that happens at the time of death? What's your philosophy on that?
A lot of it relates to, it's both actually, because some of it's trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't even know they passed away because they could have died a violent death
very quickly. Very quickly. That's what I've experienced.
Yeah. And the third is also they love their job so much they refuse to leave it.
Yeah.
They sometimes they'll go and they'll do a repeat walk. Like people always talk about
over
the walk,
and over and over and over and over again. Yeah.
Over again, just a repeat walk, because they enjoyed that time. That was to them, that was the residual time period.
Yeah.
And that was their job, and that's the job that they followed. And but if they're repeating job, that means that they died young. They didn't pass away older, as an older person. And sometimes, mind you, there were people that actually like I said, love their work. And even for women, for example, if they did die, most time that women that walk would pass away, it's always either either through consumption. Mm-hmm. They would have pneumonia, that sort of thing, or they would be possibly murdered or fallen, depends. And or like I said, a violent death. And I'm not talking about vehicles. I'm not talking about guns. Sometimes they die a violent death through the hands of the person that was their partner or ex-partner.
Husband or something, yeah. Mm-hmm. That happened a lot back in the days, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's talk about your first contact experience. Can you tell us a little bit about that with the ETs and who they were? And yeah,
my first contact experience was back in 1967. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You were never born yet.
10 years later.
Back in 67, I was 11 years old, and I remember being in my bedroom. And I don't remember even waking up. It was like in the early hours of the morning. It was like 5-6 in the morning. I don't remember even waking up. I just remember standing, looking out the window of my house. And I remember seeing this flying saucer. Like, I call it a flying saucer. It was never called a spaceship or UFO back then, or a spaceship. It was probably, but I just thought maybe it was military or, as a kid, you don't know.
Right.
I remember seeing something because I remember we didn't have TV at the time, but my parents used to go into drive-in movies, and there was a movie called The Angry Red Planet, and it was based all to do with them, the astronauts going to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And but the spaceship they had, or the American spaceships had, theirs was just looked like a regular spaceship, but it had these landing gear like pierced outwards like an arrow.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't make any sense, but they showed one part of the movie of a spaceship, and I thought, well, maybe that's the spaceship. Whoever directed the movie used that sort of a Martian look feature. And so that one day, I guess that one morning, I woke up, just like I said, looking out the window, and I see the spaceship shooting across the sky, and I could see rainbow tail, as if it was moving. It looked like rainbow colors of the tail.
Mm-hmm.
Never forget that. And I went, whoa, and I'm looking to my right in the sky, and then it disappeared. And then I looked up again looking for it, and next thing you know, I'm outside of my house, standing on the front lawn of the house.
And you don't remember how you got there?
I don't remember how I got outside. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing on wet grass, and I'm looking around all of a sudden going like, what am I doing outside? How did I get out here? You know, you got to think like an 11-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not an adult. You're trying to think of like 11-year-old, and like, what the, you know, like, what am I doing here? Like, oh, what? And how did I get outside? Like, you're trying to figure yourself out, and you're confused. So I head back in the house. It was chilly that morning too, but I head back. I remember going, never forget that day, and head back in the house. Fortunately, the door was unlocked because my dad never locked the door. Back in the 60s, we never locked doors.
Yep.
It was nothing that bothered you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got in the house and went into the bedroom and I woke my mom up and said, Mom, I seen a spaceship. And, my mom was just beginning to, she wasn't fully awake. She was still sleeping. And she goes, yes, dear. And well, I didn't say nothing. I went back to my room. The alarm goes off. My dad wakes up to get ready to go to work. And we're all having breakfast, my sister and myself, just the two of us. And next thing you know, I said to my mom again, I said, Mom, I saw a spaceship. I looked out the window this morning, I saw a spaceship. And she said, yes, dear. I said, no, Mom, I'm serious. I did see it. Yes, dear. And she thought, I was a very imaginative child.
Right.
And so nothing was said after that until about 10 o'clock in the morning. And my mom said to me, do you want to come with me downtown? My grandma took my sister, and they did their thing. My mom took my sister over to my grandma's house. And my mom said, you want to come with me downtown? We're going to go do some shopping. Sure. Now, there was no vehicle we drove. It's because my dad had his own vehicle. He had a 65 Volkswagen back then.
Oh, wow.
And, so my father drove to work, and my mom and I took the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got to think about the old buses, not the new buses, but the old buses. And so we got to the bus station and our bus stop, and we got into the bus itself. And my mom threw her change in, and then she sat behind the driver. There was nobody in there. That's where how they began their route. And I sat down across from her, and then the driver didn't go anywhere yet. He actually decided to pull out his transistor radio, and he turned it on, and the news came on, and they said on the news, this is quite interesting. They said, we have over 1,000, our phones haven't stopped ringing all morning. And since late last night, people are calling in saying there's over 1,000 sightings of UFO, of spaceships going across the sky.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at my mom. My mom looked at me, and she was, whoa. Like she said, I guess I won't doubt you, son. And I said, Mom, I told you I saw it. I told you I saw it. It was flying out above our place. And now what I did learn about that, too, in Falcon Lake region, which is part of Manitoba, which is no more than probably a couple hours away, but in Manitoba, there was a fellow who actually was a genealogist who was actually looking for silver or copper, and he was out in the forest, and he seen two spaceships hovering above the sky, and one landed.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided to walk over. Now, he thought himself that X actually was the military at first. But he walked up to the spaceship, and the door was open. And it was a small spaceship. It was one that would, I'd say the size of a house.
Mm-hmm.
And or even bigger, I should say. And anyways, the door was open, and he looked in, and he said, hello, anybody here? Because he could hear a couple people talking. Mm-hmm. But again, one thing I need to understand, this man here actually was originally from Poland, so trying to understand English, he had a hard time figuring that out.
I've read about this story.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So when he said, hello, anybody in there, and then suddenly the door started closing, and he bolted backwards, and then it started taking off, and I guess the exhaust
coming
out of the ship hit him really hard, and he landed on the ground. And when he woke up, he had black marks, like burn marks, all over his chest. But it looked like the same design as the exhaust on the spaceship, because it had apparently the part of the spaceship had a panel that had little holes in there. And I guess he was standing right next to the area where the holes were. It looked like a grid. And so it gave the same copy as if the stamp was right across his chest, and it burnt through his shirt, and he ended up getting sick when he got home, and it took him a long time to heal. But when the doctors came over, he had to go in the hospital. Doctors came over, and then they told him that there's too much radiation in his body.
Yeah.
Took him a long time to heal. He did survive.
Yeah.
But he was having dreams and connections apparently now through the years with you. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then he decided to draw everything down that he'd seen of his experience. So this all happened in the same year, back in 1960.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So that's the only close encounter to someone else besides myself.
Mm-hmm.
But my feeling is, later on through the years, I realized, like even to this day, I think I was on the ship being examined as a kid. But they weren't interested in him because he was much older. You know, this guy was in his 40s and 50s, but yet for me, they're examining me. Now, I don't know who they were at the time, but I'm thinking it was the Anunnaki, because later on through the years, as time went by, the Anunnaki knew who I was.
So when did they contact you again, where you actually had to talk to them?
I didn't pay much attention to them following me around or even me contacting them until around the year 2000.
Okay.
And I was awoken by this bright light in my house, in our bedroom. And I walked outside, and my wife woke up too, and I guess, because I said, what the hell? And she woke up, and I walked outside, and as I'm looking across, I could see three people wearing white. They look like a giant, like they look like white jumpsuits,
mm-hmm.
like head to toe is all white, and boots, gloves, pants, like the whole outfit. But what they wore was this.
really?
That's what they wore And I thought that was their own head, which basically looked like your typical
alien. Looks like a gray alien, yeah.
But they, that's what I thought they were. But these guys stood about 9, 10, 12 feet tall.
So you didn't know at this point what they looked like underneath?
I had no idea. Oh, okay. I thought that was what they, who they were and what they looked like. That's exactly right. Who they were. We're mm-hmm. very tall aliens, right?
Right.
And I'm standing there watching them, and there's nobody else outside the house. Just nobody else came out of their house to see what's going on.
Did you live out in the middle of nowhere, kind of, or?
No, I lived in a trailer park. I was actually, my wife and I just finished doing our touring across Canada. We mm-hmm. actually traveled for about 3.5 months. Mm-hmm. And we just got back, and like we had a trailer, and I gave up all of my, I didn't want to own any property at the time, and I wanted to travel. My wife and I have always wanted to travel, so we bought ourselves a trailer, and we traveled across BC for 3.5 months. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And but when we got back, we were still living in our trailer, and we went to an RV park. And so we camped there. We stayed there for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. You can live in your RVs.
Yep.
And so we stayed there for a couple of years. But anyways, I remember, to go with this part here too. So anyways, I'm back, I'm outside, I'm talking, and I'm looking at them. I didn't say anything really. And then the voice came back to me, and he said, "Hello, Derek, how are you?" And I said, "Fine." And he said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "I don't know who you are." And then I heard, and I'm watching the guy reach up, his two hands on both sides. And he lifted the helmet, I guess it was a helmet, lifted it off of his head. And here he was. Here's a guy who's long hair like mine, long hair, blonde, wow. Blue eyes, and he had a beard.
Was he tall?
He was tall, nine feet tall.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking up. He was, you think Hulk Hogan, for example, or...
9 feet tall. That's
9 feet. Like Hulk Hogan's what, six or 6'8"?
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan or even Andre the Giant, he's even taller. He's taller than Andre, and he was 9.5 feet tall, and very muscular, very large person, and a very nice, soft-spoken man. Mm-hmm. He says, "Do you remember me now?" And I said, "I'm not sure." He said, "I'm ZL," and I'm saying, "Oh, well, nice to see you." And I'm trying to pretend as if I know them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently he says, we've been coming to see you every, as much as we can. We've had you with us on our ships for many, many years. And, we're coming to see how you're doing. And I said, "Well, I'm doing good." And then he turned around and he said, "Do you want to go for a ride on our ship?" I said, "You mean I'm going to go for a ride?" "Yeah, but are you going to bring me back?" And he said, "Oh yeah, we'll bring you back." And I said, "Well, can I bring my wife?" And he said, "Yeah, if you want to." And I look back, and my wife's standing on the front lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "You want to come with me? Come on, come on." And she says, "No, no, you guys have fun." It's as if she knew them, but she said, "No, you guys have fun."
Yeah. Wow. Strange.
Like she said, "You have fun." She didn't say, "Okay," you know.
She just said, "No, you guys have fun." It wasn't something foreign to her.
No, she was casual, and I thought, okay. But anyways, I went with them.
Were you afraid?
We were in a small ship. I followed them, and we went in. And
were you afraid, Derek?
Was I afraid? No.
Yeah. No. Okay.
I felt comfortable. I thought it's kind of cool. This is cool. I'm looking around. You know, you're curious. As soon as I went back to my childhood, thinking of that spaceship that took me years ago.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I remember being in the ship like this before. Wait, and my head's just like swimming. And I sat down in a seat, looked like a seat. It was very curved, and it fit you right completely. And it looked like an imaginary, it had this auric seatbelt, but it wasn't physical.
Okay.
It just held me there.
Holographic something, probably. Yeah. Yep.
And I was in it, and we flew. And I thought we were going right up to the planet already. And he said, "No, this is a smaller ship. This is a little sister ship. We're going into the bigger one." So I'm looking out the window. They showed me a view screen, and I'm actually showing me going up to the bigger ship.
Big was the big ship?
It's about three. The only way I can explain it, it's about three football fields large.
Wow. Okay.
That big. And it was in the clouds.
Yeah.
And, you know, you ever heard of cloaking?
Cloaking. Oh, yeah. They cloaked that so nobody could see it. Sure.
Well, they cloaked. This is the cool part. Their ship was cloaked. And they said they I asked them a question. I said, oh, wait a minute. This reminds me of Star Trek. And he said, well, you're close. He said, we're the ones that taught Gene Roddenberry cloaking.
Oh, my goodness.
So they were taking Gene Roddenberry on their ships, and they're teaching him some of the things that, and that's how he became so creative.
Wow.
And I went, wow, okay, cool. And then there was...
makes you wonder, like, how many of them are out there right now that we can't see every day, all day, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they are out there.
Oh, yeah, I know that. But
they are out there. I mean, we are in the midst of them all the time, mm-hmm. and we just don't pay attention. If they do appear to you, you'll never see them standing up in front of you. They'll be sitting down, so they look like they're a regular person. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't pay attention. And they have a way of not really prominently sticking out like everybody else. They try to be as if they mixed in with you.
Right.
But like I said, when I got on the ship and I'm on the bigger ship, and then they took me around. You got on the bigger ship, yeah. And then, where was I now? They start to show me around. And they said, do you want to see the ship? I said, yeah, I'd love to. And so they're showing me around. And I said, how many people are on this ship? And he said, 330,000.
Oh, my goodness.
They have 330,000 people on this ship. But come on. And
all from the same race?
Same race.
Okay.
All the same race, 300,000. But the interesting part was they took me to the lab. Well, I don't call it a lab. It's more like it was actually like a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked in, and as I walked in the room, I could see this giant silver stainless steel vat, and it looked like it was round.
Like a pod, kind of?
Like it was round like this, you know, mm-hmm. like you see my hoop here, for example.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
And say you look like a swimming pool, mm-hmm. okay? But it's only no more than 3 feet high. And it was stainless steel looking, and there were three people inside, and they were lying down mm-hmm. with their heads back, and their head is laying on a little small pillow on the edge.
Were they sleeping?
Yeah.
Or in some kind of sedated state? Okay.
They were sleeping. They're resting, relaxing, I guess. But not sleeping, they were relaxing. And in the material of liquid was almost brownish, bluish color.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, what's that for? And they said, these three people had cancer. And we're curing them of cancer. We're going to heal the body. We're taking the poison out of their system.
Wow.
But they're also, they've been abductees like me.
Like you were. Mm-hmm.
But they were sick, and so he took them with them, and so they can get them cured, and then they can bring them back. Because they want us here longer than normal.
Right.
You know, even though we are.
Because you have a job to do.
We have a job to do, and they don't want to lose us.
Yeah.
One thing I learned from Ziel, he says to me, I said, okay, why do you come here? Like, why are you guys here? And he said, you don't know. And I said, no, I don't know. He said, we are your ancestors. So he says, we're the ones that have been working with you since the beginning of time. We've been with you for over 600,000 years.
Wow.
And even more. And he said...
did he say we created you?
He did. He said we created you. And how that happened was their own people, thousands and thousands of years ago, were fighting other beings from other planets. So basically there was a great war in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And their planet got... partially destroyed, and so they come from the planet called TM, and so I was very fortunate when he took me to the planet And when we landed, it was so cool. I mean, looking around, but it was so advanced. Like I thought, you know, when you look at the word bus, look at the, you know, a bus, for example, mm-hmm. and you got a bus that means it's long and it's got, you know, a whole bunch of wheels and it's driving people around. But when I looked outside and he's pointing to the bus station, their bus station had no wheels. And it was like a shaped like a bullet, but it was levitating above the ground. Actually, it was flying.
Wow.
And the station, like it came into the station and hooked up like a plane. It was phenomenal. Even introduced me to the bus driver. The bus driver looked like he was 90 years old.
And did so all these people look like ZL did? Did he have the elongated head?
It was not prominent because I really wasn't looking for his head, looking for the elongated. I remember him turning his head sideways partially, and I did see partially, not long. It was like a little larger than normal,
mm-hmm.
but he had so much hair,
yeah.
you know, like his hair was long. So I think he was covering it up. You know, it wasn't like, if you think about it years and years ago, you know, a lot of times their heads were bald.
Right.
Or cut short hair, but he had long hair. They have a natural lifestyle. There is no specific. I mean, most of the people were just lived like my mom would, my dad would say, they all lived like hippies. You know, free thinking.
Yeah.
You know, there was no regimentals. I didn't see one soldier. None. Nothing soldiered. These are people just lived a life. Nobody had money. Nobody had cash. Everything. I said, how do you buy things? And they said, you earn it by working. You earn points.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, if you want a home of your own, you work for it. And you get the property.
Sounds straight up enough to me.
Yeah, right? You're not. If you want to get he says, if you want to get a vehicle of your own to travel with, they'll give it to you, but you have to earn it. So you have to earn your points to keep it. But if the day you stop working, and the reason why you can do that, because they can live for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Our lifestyle is lucky we even hit 100 years old.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Their lifestyle, they can live to 1,000, even more.
Did he say what caused them to live so long? It's just that
it's the altitude. It's their planet, and like I could not stay in the planet that long because the altitude's different. They will put an implant in you where you can be there longer,
mm-hmm.
to have a lifestyle there. And what they had said was the Mayans were on Earth many thousands of years ago, and apparently there's quite a few Mayans that used to look forward to wait for that day to be taken.
Right.
And so they themselves are the ones that took the Mayans with them to the planet, because what was happening is that it's like I said before, the Great War on their planet, they lost many, many people on their planet through the Great War. So
did they say who they were warring with mainly?
The Greys.
The Greys.
They're the Greys and the Reptilians. There was mostly Reptilians that were fighting them, but different varieties of people. There were some that were very violent.
Yep.
The thing is that the Anunnaki had three groups on their own planet. They had the warriors of their own, and the warriors were the ones with red hair, long red hair. They looked like Vikings in a way. That's how the Vikings started.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. This is how the Vikings started here on this planet, because it's all to do with the teachings from the Anunnaki, the red one, redheads. Mm-hmm. I'm using redhead as an example.
Sure. Sure.
And they're the ones that were always warrior. They're always willing to go and kill. They're willing to
protect their people. And
But like, say a person like us, they can easily rip you right in half without even. And if you shoot a gun at them, for example, if you shoot a bullet at them, the bullets just bounce off them.
Wow.
Like their skin is a lot thicker and denser. Those are them, and then they have the scientists, and those are medical. But most of the scientists are even trained now. The man that I met, they introduced me to, who was one of the leading scientists on their planet. He looked like Deepak Chopra.
Yeah, I heard this story.
And I looked at him and I said, Deepak Chopra? And he goes, and he looks at me and goes, really? You had to say it. I said, well, why not? You look like him. And he says, no, he looked like me. I'm his doppelganger. I'm the one that gave him his face.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm thinking, oh, okay. But he didn't sound like him. He looked like him. But
he gave him part of his DNA, I guess, yeah.
He gave him part of his DNA. So a lot of the DNA is gene pool is passed down to people on this earth. Now, they want to populate but also repopulate. They wanted to improve. There's an advantage and disadvantage. They want to repopulate their own planet, but they also want to renew the population of Earth because they want us to learn to be a lot more intelligent. And not because people think that – people say, oh, because we were Cro-Magnon. No, no, no. Cro-Magnon was Cro-Magnon. That was their biggest mistake they made, was a dumbass hunter. That's all they were made of. And there was that was one specific group. No man was ever made through an ape. That was never – an ape was an ape.
Yeah.
Man was man. And this is one thing they were pointing out to me, and they said, no, ape was not going into man. You talk about – when they talk about that leading up, that style, and the man turn.
Evolution, yeah, that doesn't happen.
And here you go. It never happened. He said, just some scientists –
That never resonated with me either.
No. He said, humankind, even Adam and Eve was human. Adam and Eve were different races that we created. Different color of skin was not just one Adam and Eve,
mm-hmm.
but they made their first Adam and Eve to live for thousands of years in the Garden of Eden. So Adam and Eve, their gene was created by Enlil and
Enki.
Those are the two that helped create it, and because they had a laboratory, they created the gene pool of that.
Wow.
Okay, that's where it started.
Wow.
And then from there on, then they co-created more new – what they're really looking for, they're trying to get humankind to live longer. And the reason why they want them to live longer is so they can be labor.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them had their freedom. Humankind had their freedom. But they need them for labor, and they need them for the gold mines. And because gold was very important to them, it was used as a food as well as a fuel.
It's a supplement, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And monatomic gold is, I take that every day, actually.
And you'd be surprised, it actually improves the brain.
It rewires the brain completely, and my psychic abilities went from, like, you know, 5 to 10, like, you know, after a month of it. So stuff really does work. So, I mean, that's always resonated with me, too.
So they'd show me something. They had a piece of gold in their hand, the palm of their hand, and I used to remember watching him. And he took the piece of gold and he's actually playing with it, like molding it in the palm of his hand. And as he's playing with it, he can actually shape it, like with the heat of his fingers,
wow.
And shaping the gold. And they're like most people, you know, goldsmiths are going tap 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 trying to make it shape. Their fingers, the density of their fingers are so strong, they can actually press the gold and flatten it out like a penny.
Wow.
That's how strong they were. But they know how to use the breakdown. They were using different kinds of moldavites, tektites of sorts. They were mixing copper with silver. They had another laboratory where they were making different kinds of alloys, making tools. It was really neat. I mean, something I would never ever see, ever. They took me to a museum, and they showed me around. And I remember seeing a little boy. This one part really gets me. I remember seeing a mother and a child come in,
mm-hmm.
and the boy looked indigenous, and he was wearing a cardboard bustle. Bustle, not as in dress bustle, but as in a powwow bustle. He's wearing cardboard,
yeah.
But looked like feathers, like eagle feathers. And he wore that around his waist. But that's his passed, I guess his mom told him the story about their people once lived on the earth, and he was wearing it when they went into the museum. So that was what he, that was his own pretend costume, who he was. And I watched him, I thought, what are you doing here? How come that's here? And so I asked Yael that, and he says, because he was Mayan. And he's just, his mother's telling the story about the pride of who they, you know, what they did on the earth, on this planet. I said, well, and then I looked at him and I said, why'd you take everybody? He says, we didn't. Our people didn't. He said, they volunteered to go because they wanted to help to populate the world. So they just suddenly got up and left. Some stayed behind, but there was they figured up maybe about 190,000 that went with them, maybe more. No, sorry, no, about 1.9 million, not 190,000. Well, about 1.9 million went with them, and then there's others that stayed behind. But the ones that stayed behind were already taught the history, and they did exist, so they'll pass down some of the stories and the memories of the Anunnaki that were there at the time. There was a lot of kings and queens that were, I guess you'd say, you know, people call them the gods, and they used. I mean, he says his ancestors loved the idea of being called gods. They took advantage of it, and they took advantage of the people.
Did they say who created them and, like, who, you know, the creator, the ultimate creator? Did they ever speak about that?
I asked, that's what I asked. I said, well, who created you guys? And he said, you know, Derek. He said, God created you. And I said, God. He says, but the gods created you. Not one. He said, more than one. He says, we're all one, but we're all one of all races, different races across the land and the galaxies. And I said, well, why? And I was talking to him more about this, and I said, okay, you know, if you guys are considered gods, and you come to get me, but why? Why would you come to get me? You're going to keep me here? And he goes, no, you're going to be here for just have fun, enjoy yourself, we'll bring you back. And he said, but we need to talk, we need to sit down with you for something. And I said, okay. And he said, here, have some tea. And he gave me a little, looked like a shot glass, but it was white. And he says, drink this if you can. And I said, what is it? He says, it's like a tea. So I drank it. And next thing I know, I could feel a couple, well, not even a minute and a half, and I could feel this as if I'm ready to throw up, but not a complete throw up. It's more like a something's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, and I'm trying to keep myself from throwing up. I don't want to do that
regurgitating.
Regurgitate, but it's a memory I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reaching my fingers in my throat trying to pull out that which just suddenly came to the surface. And I'm trying to pull it out, and I pulled it out and had a mucusy look, but it looked like fibrous material. Look like little fibers, like you ever seen those angels?
Like from the Matrix, huh?
You ever seen those fiber optics that's on those little those angels,
yep.
Right? But it was shaped like a bean on the head of it,
mm-hmm.
And it looked like fiber optics. And I pulled it right out, and it was all my mucus and stuff, I guess, in my stomach or throat. And I threw it. I took it out, and I went, oh! And now I'm trying to find a place to get rid of it. And I remember seeing a little tin can down below, and I took one of the napkins they had on the counter and took it, put it inside and put it in a tin can. And I'm looking around pretending as if nothing ever happened. I don't want nobody to know.
Right.
You know? So I'm looking around a little bit to see, and this lady walks in. She goes, Derek, how are you doing? Long time no see. And they're going like, but yet my mind's thinking, I know you, but I don't know you. You know what right. I mean? Like, it's almost like, yeah, how are you doing? And she gave me a big hug. How are you doing? Oh my goodness, you're looking so well. She's oh, my goodness. Oh, something about you. What'd you do? And she looked at me like, you know, like that kind of look like, what did you do?
Yeah.
I said, do what? And she goes, let me look at your hand. And she looked at my hand. She goes, oh, you don't have a life. What happened? You don't have a future. What'd you do? And I said, I don't know. And she says, did you take out your implant? I said, what are you talking about? And she goes, okay, where'd you put it? And I said, put what? She says, we gave you some of that tea. I said, yeah. Where'd you put it? She said, did you throw it up? And I said, did it come out of your throat? And I said, yeah. And she said, where'd you put it? And I put it in that can. And she goes, okay. So she goes there. She picks it up, hands it to the lab tech. And she says, we need to get new implants put in. She says, because you've advanced so well. And I said, you're kidding me. She goes, yeah, you don't need it to be, you need to swallow it no more. She says, you're fine. I said, when did I swallow this? She says, oh, when you were 8 years old. And I'm thinking, 8 years old. And I didn't think about it until many years later. Mm-hmm. And I thought, eight, that's the time I saw the ship. So that's
how.
Okay. So anyways, they say, well, okay, come with us. And so they got me to sit, she's patting the table. Here, sit here, come sit over here. It's like a gurney. And she says, we're gonna put the implant back into you. And I said, where? And she says, we're gonna put it back of your thigh. Mm-hmm. And I said, is it gonna hurt? She goes, no, it shouldn't hurt. It'll fit in. So I'm laying down and I took my pants off and then on my one leg, and I'm on the gurney, one leg up on the left side. And they were trying to put the implant in behind my thigh, right mm-hmm. in here. And I could feel very discomforting, like, ow, ow. And they said, just take a breath. You're almost in there. Take a breath. And it's the same kind of bean-like shape, mm-hmm. But it was smaller. And it was almost like, but it was smaller. And
Did it form into your skin? It just seeped in there?
Yeah, it apparently absorbs onto the skin wall inside. So I got a little knot behind my thigh. And so I looked in the mirror later on when I got home, I looked in the mirror and now I have a scar behind my thigh. But, and then
have
she
you ever
said,
had a doctor look at it and see?
Oh, they know. They won't talk about it. They'll say, oh, well, you have a cyst there.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
So, and then she got me to take another one that's smaller, but it's a little silver ball, and mm-hmm. not even a ball, silver thing. And she says, now I'm going to do something here. And she says, I want you to hold this into your nose. And you go real quick. And I said, is that going to hurt? She goes, no, just take your time. And it'll go in and it'll go in. And I don't know how I did it, but she did it. And she just got me excited. And I went like this. And I went, oh, and it feels weird. And it was right behind my past.
Oh, I would hate that. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. But this side here it feels like it's plugged, but it's not plugged.
Yeah.
It's right inside of here. I could feel it right in here. That's where it is.
Yeah.
And I said, why there? And she says, because that's a sensor so we can actually read your thoughts. And we can send memory. We can send thoughts to you through our through our tech.
And this is to help you, right? Not like, because some people, some of the listeners would think, oh, implants are bad. It's to, you know, download these old templates. Of.
I didn't feel intruded. I didn't feel like they're trying to hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like it was kind of cool. It was exciting in a way. Like she says, we need you. You're important to us.
Mm-hmm.
I went, oh, okay. It's almost like a superhero. You're thinking, you know, okay, what other disguise are you going to give me? You know, where's Marvel?
Yeah.
You know,
give me some more technology. Let me see.
Yeah, give me some more technology. Yeah. I'm going to be
gadgets.
One of those superheroes. and then what else took me? I went to the museum and they were showing me all the history of what the Anunnaki had done in the past, and they had a lot of things that they asked me if I want to go for a swim.
Mm-hmm.
I said sure, and they said, well, we don't have the water on our planet compared to what you've got. And I said, well, what is it? And she says, you don't even have to change your clothes, you should just jump right in. So they took me out to this lake. It looked like a lake, and it was all silver. Everything was silver liquid. It looked like mercury.
Wow.
I said, is this mercury? She goes, no, it's not mercury. And I said, but it looks like mercury, but it's safe. And apparently there was a certain bomb that was used to explode the planet. And for some reason, turned the water into a silvery color.
Mm-hmm. But was it like viscous? Was it thick or was it?
It was thick. It was thick. And so I can jump on it. I can try to get into it, but it'll just force you to the top.
Oh, wow.
Never sinking it. And so I literally jumped on it. It was almost like being on a waterbed.
Yeah.
I jumped and I'm there and I'm,
my daughter
and
would love that.
Yeah. I'm like this. And I'm getting up and I'm trying to run on it and I go through it. And like you can do some crazy stuff, but you make it back. I mean, and she says, when you get off, when you're on top of it, she says, just roll, keep on rolling towards the shore. So I had to roll towards the shore, but I never fell through. I was safe. That's what it looked like and or felt like. And it was, I'm thinking, okay, but don't you guys have water? Yes, we make it. But they bring the water in from Earth. Now, one thing
I've heard about this. Okay, I've heard that they do that.
Yeah, they bring the water from Earth to their planet. One thing I've learned that...
Is it because their water is not safe or they don't have any?
No, they don't have as much water on their planet as they used to because of the bombing. Because of when they were attacked thousands and thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was, a great war over, over 300,000-400,000 years ago. Something like that. They said there was a great war. In fact, the war kit, when they landed, when they came onto Earth, and they were trying to make settlements on Earth because of the invasion. So they went to Earth thinking that they'll be safe and they're going to start over again.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was more invasion. Other extraterrestrials are trying to bomb Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're trying to, I guess, extraterrestrials or other beings didn't like how smart the Anunnaki were. And
they felt threatened.
They felt threatened that they feel that they had to destroy them so they can control the, like, you know, like.
Now, who created the reptilians? How did that, did they talk about that?
The gods. The gods created reptilians.
Right. Like, and how did they become malevolent, being that, just by choice, I guess?
The reptilians actually have ability to turn into humans. They can,
right.
They can, they're a face.
Well, there's the Nihal race that's supposed to be, I don't know if you've heard of them, they're actually benevolent now, so
yeah, they know how, like, it's almost like they look like, how do you say it? You know how some small lizards can change into look like as if they fit into
chameleon.
Their
mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
Chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what these reptilians are. They're chameleons. They're like chameleons. They can they can transform to look like a human.
Mm-hmm.
They can't replicate a human. Like they can't replicate your thoughts. They cannot replicate what you look like. They'll come up with their own feature, and or what they think you look like. They'll look at
that's
you.
That's why they can never get it perfect. Like when you, that's interesting.
They try to look like you, but they can't be you because their eyes, their eyes are the only thing that doesn't change that well. Their
Have
eyes
you ever seen a reptilian here on Earth? They just look vacant, like something's not quite right there. I have once, and it scared, like it terrified me.
Yeah, but the reptiles here, I mean, anything that's here on this earth now, especially the alligators and crocodiles. The alligators and crocodiles were partially of the reptilian that came from other planets.
Oh.
But they did not go to full human scale. They were just reptiles.
Okay. And so they won't ever be able to ascend, or?
Never be able to ascend. They won't ascend to human. They'll stay actually crocodiles, alligators. Because there is the gene that got taken. Apparently, Anunnaki cut the gene pool that they cannot go to the next level. And that's what they did with the humans. They made the gene pool where they try to teach, give us advancement and knowledge. And they would pass the knowledge and advancement to our dreams and visions.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who's a Hollywood producer, director, whatever, say Stephen King or George Lucas.
Stephen King definitely has been.
Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg, who actually was in the presence of extraterrestrials.
Oh, I believe that too, yeah.
He met them in person, but he did not meet Ziel's people. He met the other ones. He met the whites. the other extraterrestrials, like the ones I showed you on that green head, those are the ones that he met.
Mm-hmm.
They're also peacekeepers. They are also taking women, mostly for breeding purposes, because their planet's dying out.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not, because, and here's a problem that we have with our federal government or all of our governments, no matter what parts of the world. But I feel bad for the people that are American. You guys are American because I'm not saying your president's bad. But every president is being convinced by a specific organization,
mm-hmm,
that you need to hate the aliens. Well, number one, who created the word alien? Okay? United States.
Yeah.
The United States created the word alien. Well, number one, we are the aliens.
Yeah.
Because originally the Anunnaki and other beings were from this planet first before us. We were created by them.
Right.
We were improved by them, not say created. We were created and improved. So as generations go, and each time they work with you, each time they work with me and next generation, they can either become improved, and you can either have a job being a 9-to-5er, or you can be a messenger for them and the teacher, and you can be talking about, you know, the advancements of future. Now, as an example, when I was 16 years old, I wasn't supposed to be here. I was supposed to be leaving this world. I was supposed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was finished. But I watched a fellow by the name Walter Cronkite, and when Walter Cronkite came on TV doing a documentary talking about the future and space age, I said to my mom, I want to see the future. I want to see the space age.
You were going to commit suicide?
No. Oh. Spirit was coming to get me.
Oh, okay.
It was my time to leave.
Really?
And I told him, no, I wanted to stay. And the person that came to get me was Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah. I was outside working in the garden on the farm. And he says, hello, Derek. And I remember seeing this beautiful light, beam of light come across me, mm-hmm, in the garden. I was doing the potatoes. And he says, hello, Derek. And I'm looking to my right and went, oh, okay. And I was in awe of him in a way. There was a beautiful, it looked like crackled light.
Could you feel the energy off of him, just love and, yeah?
All I could feel was my heart was crying inside.
Yeah.
Like I was literally in tears. It's like you knew him, but I was afraid to name him.
Yeah.
You know, because, and he just basically said to me, hello, Derek, how are you? And I said, good. He said, I come to get you. And I said, why? And he said, well, it's your time. You fulfilled your life here. You don't have to stay here anymore. And I said, no, I want to stay. He said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I want to see the future. He says, I watched Walter Cronkite. I don't want to give this up. And he says to me, okay, well, he says, be at peace. And he says, but let you know ahead of time that we will come for you when you turn 18 and you'll be making a decision then. So I didn't think anything of it. And then my dad gave me a truck for my birthday when I turned 18, and I drove down the highway and I flipped my truck. And then I remember seeing the white light.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my hands were on the steering wheel and all I see was white light. I rolled my truck in the ditch. But for some reason, the door opened up on the driver's side and it threw me out. Now, the truck that I had was a 64 Ford stick shift, but it had no seatbelts.
Yeah, they didn't have seatbelts back in those days, yeah.
And for some reason, there was someone or something pushed me out from the passenger side.
Oh.
And as the truck was flipping sideways, the door opened up and it pushed me out to the ground while the truck was still flying, hitting the telephone pole on the roof of the truck. The truck came back over me again, rolled again, and landed on its wheels. So the roof of the driver's side was caved in.
So I should have been dead, yeah.
Survived, right? And I wasn't driving crazily, but just basically I was driving on a gravel road that lost control.
Yeah.
And so about, I'm not sure what time it was, but I somehow opened my eyes I opened my eyes and woke up and opened my eyes and I was like, ow, my head. And I looked up and I seen my truck on the wheels, but the roof on the driver's side was caved in. And I thought, all I could think of myself was, my dad's going to kill me.
You know, I would have been doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, so my dad.
I staggered to my feet, and I got to the truck, and I thought, okay, this is a stick shift, and the truck should be working still. And I got to the passenger side, and I reached over. I put my foot on the clutch and the brake and turned on the truck. And it turned back on, and backed the truck out of the ditch onto the road. Again, think about the roof caved in on the driver's side.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm driving from the
passenger side.
As an 18-year-old kid, just like, I got to start this. I got to get it home. Explain myself.
So I'm living on the farm, so I got it. I wasn't too far from there, and I got into the driveway. I turned everything off and let go of everything, and it shut and stopped. Mm-hmm. And I come out of the passenger side of the truck, and my dad's coming out of the barn towards me. My mom's coming out of the house just screaming.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, what happened? And told my parents, and my mom came running up to me. And mothers are funny because you know how mothers are. They're like a cat. They want to lick everything off of you, make sure your wounds are healed. My mother had a tea towel in her hand, and the first thing she did, she licked her cloth or licked the tea towel to get the blood off my forehead, and yet there was no cut there. The blood was there, but no cut. Mm-hmm. And she wiped it all off, and she's trying to see if there's any wounds. I said, no, I'm okay. And then I found out later it's called stigmata.
Oh.
So I got brought back, and I guess whatever that happened during that white light, I made a decision that I was going to stay. So I went through resurrection. I wasn't supposed to be here.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you had the, basically, like, not the wounds, like not the physical wounds from it, but you had the blood and things.
I had the blood seeping. Blood was seeping through my forehead, my third eye.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
cool. And I didn't know anything about that, what it meant, until many years later someone said, and then an older woman told me, she says, I told her my story, and she says, you just went through stigmata. She said, Christ resurrected you.
Whew. That gives
and
you the
I went,
chills. Wow.
I went, okay, that's cool, but who's going to believe that? You know.
Yeah.
So, I hang on to these memories.
Have you done regression? Because I bet you can probably get some of that back.
Well, actually, I've done past life regressions. I found out who I was in my past life. I remember even seeing myself being born.
Regressed you for this incident.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember it. I'll never forget what happened and where I was.
Going to the light and that experience with Jesus.
What happened. What happened was I wanted to find out what made them decide to let me stay.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I asked them, why did you let me stay? And they said, we didn't let you stay. You stayed because you chose to change your life. You have a life contract. Everyone has a life contract.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a decision whether how long you want to stay. And so at the beginning, I said, I'll stay here till about 16. Because my last life, I was in the Second World War. I was a British soldier fighting the Germans. I remember who I was by name. I was infantry. I was 23 years old. I went by the name of Richard. And I was in Germany fighting the Germans. And they were out in the field. They're behind the hay wagons.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the stray bullet hit me in the chest and took my life then. So
psychic ability? Do you know in your past lives?
I don't think I did. I think I was just a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just didn't make any sense. Why would I be in the military? Why do I need that sixth sense?
Yeah.
But for some reason at the time, like I said, my life was shorted at 23. But when I came back into this life, I could not stand wars. I did not like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like even a gun in my hand. I was mad. Like, how dare they? And I mean, I loved shooting, as in target shooting.
Yeah.
Because my mother and I used to go in the field and go shoot, you know, practice shooting.
Mm-hmm.
She had her rifle. I had mine. My dad and Harley even had a rifle in his hand. My mom and I. My mother was an expert shot. She can 500 yards. She can kill a gopher.
Yep.
That's how good she was. But my mother used to be an expert shot, and her dad taught her, but that's how he survived. You know, being an indigenous person, you had to find your own meat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shoot rabbits. Yeah. My grandfather one time got caught between a bear and a cub. He only had a rabbit gun, and a short little rabbit gun, 22.
Oh, my God.
And the mother came after him.
Was this before you were born?
Before I was born. Mm-hmm. My grandfather told me the story. or told my told me this. My mom passed it down to me too to make sure I didn't forget. My grandfather just stood there and he waited until she got really close, no more than maybe a 3 feet, and he popped her between the eyes and down she went. It was either his life or hers. But he took the cub to the police, mm-hmm. and the cub was taken to a place where they can raise it.
Aww.
So, yeah, but that happens when you're in some areas where you have to survive, right?
You wouldn't be here had he not survived.
My granddad, he actually took her meat, and we had bear meat, but I could not eat bear meat because I kept throwing up bear meat. And I couldn't figure out why, and I found out later that I'm actually bear clan. You cannot eat your own kind.
You're what? Bear clan?
I'm bear clan.
What is that?
Bear clan means that I work with the spirit of the bear, and so I cannot eat my own kind. So the bear spirit entered me and stayed with me ever since.
I had an ancestral healing done, and there was a being that wouldn't leave. That was in my energy. And the guy that was doing the ancestral healing sent in this big extra-dimensional bear, or ET bear, to get rid, and that thing went like that once it saw this, and it came out of, like, you know, my eyes closed, but it came out of my peripheral vision, and it mm-hmm. scared me too. Like, so yeah, I know those extra dimensional bears are they're very powerful too. So
yeah. So anybody, and people have actually come up to me and they'll say, Derek, I don't know what it is, your energy is so powerful. She's mm-hmm. we can feel it. A lady friend of mine, I was at a powwow. And I was outside. The powwow was indoors in the gymnasium, one of the schools. And apparently, Judy was actually talking. She's the one that was sensitive, and she was talking to my wife in the gymnasium. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Where's Derek?" And she said, "Oh, he's outside somewhere." And I guess as I was coming into the door, her back was facing my wife, and Judy says, "Oh my God, Derek's coming in the door right now." She says, how can you tell? She goes, I can tell when he's coming as if his energy is that strong.
Wow.
So some people can actually.
How did you find out what clan you were? Like, I'd be interested to find out what my.
Well, because of my indigenous ancestor, mm-hmm. I'm actually Ojibwe Mi'kmaq, Métis. I'm actually, my grandmother's from Bear River Reserve in Nova Scotia. She was taken as a slave from the Canadian government and forced as a slavery to a family.
Wow.
They were selling the children for $10 each.
Oh,
and they took over 100 kids from reservation, and she was 10 years old, and they weren't allowed to leave those families. She was a servant. She was actually working as she was a servant, and she was not allowed to leave the family until she was 25. That was a law, and that was back in the early to mid 1800s.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but they don't tell you the story. The Canada has a lot of shame here. But this is the eastern coast of Canada.
Well, I'm German. I'm German, and Germany has a lot of shame too, you know, their history. So.
Well, you know what? I think almost every country had its own shame.
Yeah.
Through generation, so we all go through it. You know, it's the intergenerational past. Everyone's had the past.
It's important to clear it.
For example, I'll give an example. The Jewish people, sure, what they went through during the Second World War, the Jews were executed and put in the Auschwitz camp mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. Many thousands to millions of lives were killed. But if you go back a few thousand years before, the Jews were the ones that were killers.
I was just going to – this is a very controversial topic, so I want to be very careful, but – I actually have the old paper from Germany that where the Jews declared war on Germany first, and then that's when they retaliated. Because I've got a copy of the paper as well. So I didn't believe that either when somebody told me that, and I went and did my when I went to Germany, I went and did the history and looked at it, and I was like, wow, sure enough, it's true.
Well, they were saying it's in an ancient Egypt dominated by Roman Empire, violent religious upheaval burst in the streets of Alexandria, confined within the walls of the most famous library of antiquity. Two rivals, the perfect Orestes and Davis, which is spelled D-A-V-U-S, a young slave will compete for the heart of Hypatia, the eminent mathematician. Now, Hypatia was a woman. She was the very first woman who actually was in Roman cabinet and the only one who's ever been in life. Mm-hmm. The movie is called Agora. It's based on a true story because when she was stoned to death by the Jews later on when they invaded the Roman building. Mm-hmm. And so basically it's all to do with Alexandria in the year, what was that now? What year is that? 391 AD. And this is the world changed forever.
So that's funny that that you've heard that too, though, because very few people know that part of it.
Yeah. She herself, she was actually was an astrologer. She studied astronomy with her grandfather. Mm-hmm. She was very, very smart, intelligent, and she used to be in the cabinet, in the political cabinet, and she was, the men gave her say to speak. So it was not just a man's world. The time, at that time, was equalness. Mm-hmm. And then when the Jews came in, Jewish people came in, and they were violent, and they would say, no woman is above any man, no woman's by any woman's side.
Right.
Or man's side, and so they would stone him to death. And so she died being stoned to death by the leader himself. And from there on, that's – so again, it's the beginning of a karmic debt.
Right.
So that's where it started. So whatever happened at the time during the 391 AD, then again the beginning of the Second World War, the Germans are killing the Jews, this is where that – memory comes in. So again, I was a karmic debt. That's my thinking.
No, I 100% agree with you on that. And I think if we all don't resolve our ancestral healing, I think it's a essential part of your psychic health, if you will, then you're going to be doomed to repeat all the problems of your ancestors over and over and over again if you don't.
And people always say about karma, you know, what goes around comes around. But it's never above it. Like people say, well, you know, what you did to me, I want to go after you 10 times more.
Right.
No, you don't. You basically, for example, if anybody who's ever committed murder, say a man killed a little girl, mm-hmm. when he dies, when this man crosses over, he's going to come back as a little girl and he's going to go through and repeat the same karma. It will he'll never get away with murder. Like, for example, use O.J. Simpson as an example. Mm-hmm. Knowingly, he killed his wife, and he thinks he got away with murder. Mm-hmm. And I learned this from spirit. They said there's man's law and there's God's law.
Yeah.
Okay? You may get away with man's law, but God will never let you get away with murder.
That's true.
So if you want to confess your sin, you be very truthful and tell the truth, because if you don't, it's going to come and nip you back in the rear end.
Yeah, people don't realize that. They think this is it, you know, we're here for this time, and then we, boom, they got away with it, and it's done. It's like, oh, no.
You can't catch me. Yes, we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't outrun karma and, you know, things that you've done, and that's the point, though. I think if you make a choice to change and be better, that's how you fix it, too, and then also doing your ancestral healing, healing the, you know, karma of your past ancestors who lived before you, then you're not hearing their, you know, all of their problems in your ear as well, especially if you're psychic, you know, because I was constantly getting a lot of chatter from them and things, and I knew those weren't my thoughts, you know, and it was like, where is this coming from? As soon as I did that ancestral healing, quieted all that down.
Good.
So, yeah. Well, listen, it's been great having you on. I've really, really appreciated your coming on and talking. It's very, very interesting. I'm sure listeners will agree. But we'd love to have you on again, you know, and, you know, keep in touch and see what you're up to. What do you got going on next? And can you tell everybody where they can get a hold of you?
Coming up, well, I'm going to be actually at the UFO Mega Conference in Laughlin, Nevada.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, that's actually happening on February 15th to 22nd. It's going to be an 8-day event.
Okay.
It'll be held at the Aquarius Hotel Resort Casino in Laughlin. So if anybody wants to get tickets, if you guys want to come up and see me there, I'll be doing a presentation on the platform, telling a little bit more about my story. This is some of the stuff that I was involved in. But there's going to be well over 30 people coming in, and they're going to have the great Jordan Maxwell, and so we have Johnny Enoch, Daniel Brinkley will be there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of really great people that people will know, and even Dr. Bruce Goldberg.
So, oh, I love him. I love him. He does fantastic work with the future lives, and a lot of what he says about time travel resonates with me too. So
yeah, so there's going to be a lot of great people there, and they said there's going to be, let's see, Night Sky Watch as well. So
oh, wow.
Every night we'll be going outside and watch this spaceships
yep.
in the sky. And also one thing I actually let people know that when you're there, don't be surprised if you may come across a person who's extraterrestrial and may come up to you and say hello one day, that day. Because there are some people that are extraterrestrials that actually will come to this event and watch us perform our talk. They want the word out there. You know, the media, or basically, you know, wherever this military, name it, don't want us to talk about it, but yet they want us to talk about it because they are the true guardians of the galaxy. And the Anunnaki are the ones that are trying to protect our world,
mm-hmm.
and they're making sure that we don't blow it up because they don't want us to make the same mistake twice.
Yep, yeah.
So that's what we're going to try to share.
So, and tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want a reading or if they...
Yeah, they can also contact me. I have a website called whiteskycloud.com. That's whiteskycloud.com. And they can go on my Facebook page. You can look for Derek White Sky Cloud, DERRICK, White Sky Cloud, all one word. And if they want to get a reading, they're more welcome to. I work all over the world. And I've been a psychic and a medium for over 30 years.
Yeah, wow. Well, thank you so much again. And the last question I have for you is, and I ask all my guests this, what is your hope for humanity?
Hope for humanity is start listening to yourself more often and start trusting your own skills, your own abilities, and try not to let others put you down to think what you're valued at. Because right now, today, there's so many people that have become so racist towards each other, and you know, try not to get influenced by leaders of these of our countries that think that they can have priority and to try to hurt others, because we're never brought in this world to hate. We're brought in this world to love, and we need to learn to love each other more often and to share. You know, we may not agree with our lifestyles at times, but you know what? We're all called human beings
mm-hmm.
before we even take a name.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Derek. We appreciate it. Have a great evening.
Okay, you take care.
Bye-bye.